Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So if you've spent any time at all in higher ed recently, you've definitely heard hybrid, loads of it. But today, we're pushing past that. We're diving into something called hybrid flexible or high-flex learning environments. And these come with a really unique stack of challenges. Specifically, how do you make sure your assessment is fair? And, how do you keep everyone equally engaged when, like, half your students are right there in the room and the other half are, well, anyway.
Yeah, scattered all over. And that's really where we want to focus today. Our mission, if you will, is to pull out the core usable knowledge from Dr. Brian Beatty's work. He did a lot of the foundational stuff on HyFlex course design starting way back at San Francisco State. So we're distilling his insights on creating truly equivalent learning paths. And this is the exciting part, how custom generative AI tools are stepping up as, frankly, indispensable partners for both the faculty and the students trying to navigate these multimodal courses.
And what's really interesting right off the bat is that HyFlex wasn't just, cooked up during the pandemic scramble. It actually has a proper origin story. It goes back to around 2005, SF State.
That's right.
Apparently, a department there needed to boost enrollment. So they were trying to figure out how to integrate their traditional face-to-face students with online learners.
Yeah, it was an administrative need initially.
The first thought was just, okay, let's flip the whole program online. But Beatty saw that, well, the campus didn't want to lose its in-person vibe, its student body there. And just shifting online wasn't really the full answer.
Precisely. They were trying to fix a specific problem enrollment number, student flexibility, but they quickly realized they needed a pedagogical solution, something that actually put the student more in control. If they just did a standard hybrid model where the faculty dictates who's online when, they'd lose that flexibility they needed to attract that broader mix of students. So this real need for genuine flexibility, that's what kind of forced the evolution into HyFlex.
Okay, so let's unpack this properly then. High flex, it's a mashup, right? Hybrid and flexible.
A portmanteau.
We know it combines face-to-face, synchronous online, so live online, and asynchronous online activities like recordings and forums. But what's the single non-negotiable thing that makes HyFlex different from just plain hybrid?
The absolutely defining characteristic is learner choice. That's number one. It's the first key design principle.
Learner choice.
Students get offered legitimate, equally supported ways to participate. And they choose, often session by session, actually. If I feel like coming to campus today, great. If tomorrow I need to stay home and tune into the live stream, I can do that. If I miss both and need to catch up later this week using the recordings and materials, that's fine too. That choice is absolutely fundamental.
So, okay, if choice is principle number one, what else holds this framework together? Because those principles, they have to support the choice, but also keep things academically sound.
Absolutely. And the second one is probably the most challenging. It's equivalence.
Equivalence.
And we need to linger on this because it's so often misunderstood. Equivalence does not mean everyone gets the same experience. That's impossible. It means everyone achieves the same measurable learning outcomes. You absolutely have to focus on the skill, the knowledge they gain, not the how, not the specific delivery method.
That makes total sense when you say it, but wow, that must be incredibly hard to pull off in practice. I mean, how do you make sure the person watching recordings later, maybe posting on a forum, gets to the same place as someone in a live classroom debate?
That is the core tension, exactly. And managing that tension, well, that leads us to the other principles. Reusability is the next one. Designing content, activities that you can reuse across the different modes, that helps manage the faculty workload, which can explode otherwise.
Yeah, I bet.
And finally, accessibility. Making sure all the materials, the tech systems, the network resources, everything is genuinely usable by every student, whichever path they pick.
I think the whole thing only really clicks its real-world value when you add that fifth piece that ties it all together, impact evaluation.
Crucial, absolutely crucial.
Because you can offer all these paths, set it all up, but if you don't actually check if it's working, you might find your asynchronous students are, I don't know, struggling, feeling disconnected, maybe even dropping out. The design has to make sure those initial goals, high-quality learning, access, equity, inclusion, are actually being met, not just sort of promised on paper.
You have to close the loop, evaluate the success of the whole system, not just whether individual students pass the course.
Okay, which brings us neatly to section two, that assessment challenge. This feels like where most attempts at high flex might stumble or even break down.
It's definitely a pressure point.
How do faculty make sure those learning outcomes are truly equivalent when the experiences are just so different? And maybe more importantly, how do you stop that asynchronous student feeling like, you know, a second-class participant who's kind of getting the leftovers?
Yeah, the third-class feeling, BD calls it sometimes. And this is where we have to dig deeper than just looking at, say, final grades.
How so?
Well, think about it. Many courses might put, I don't know, 30% of the grade down to participation.
Sure, happens all the time.
But what does participation usually measure? Often it's just behavior. Did the student log in? Did they post twice in the forum like they were told? It doesn't automatically measure if they actually learned the concept deeply.
Right, checking boxes.
Exactly. So faculty have to consciously design for actual content acquisition and make assessment equitable. And that means shifting the focus, sometimes quite radically.
So when you're designing these learning outcomes, you have to be like meticulously neutral about the modality.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned focusing purely on the what and cutting out the how. Can you give us a concrete example of that?
Sure. So a poorly written outcome, one that wouldn't work for HyFlex, might say something like, students will participate in a 4-person synchronous Zoom breakout room discussion about topic X.
Okay, yeah, very specific.
Too specific. The how their synchronous 4-person Zoom breakout completely excludes anyone participating asynchronously. They just can't meet it.
Right.
So the corrected HyFlex friendly version would be something like, students will demonstrate critical analysis of topic X. See? The process, whether they write an analysis, record a short video critique, maybe participate in a live chat if they're synchronous, or even use an AI simulation we'll talk about later, that part becomes flexible. As long as they meet that core objective, critically analyzing topic X.
Okay, that immediately points towards moving away from standardized, kind of rigid tests.
Definitely.
And moving towards more authentic assessments.
Yeah.
Things that give students real options. I really like that story from the source material about presentations.
Oh, yeah. That's a great illustration of what equivalence looks like in practice. Think about a standard presentation, often high-stress, live delivery.
Tell me about it.
Right. So for a student in the synchronous session, maybe someone who gets really anxious about public speaking, that specific delivery method becomes a huge barrier. It stops them showing what they actually know.
Right.
So by giving them the option to, say, play a pre-recorded presentation during the live session instead of doing it live on the spot, you keep the core outcome showing their project work, their thinking, but you respect that student's need for a different way to demonstrate it. It's flexible.
But that level of personalized flexibility, I mean, that sounds almost impossible to manage if you have large classes. The administrative overhead seems huge.
Yeah.
Unless you bring in some help.
Bingo. Technology. That's the perfect pivot point here. These problems of scale, of providing individualized support across modes, they almost demand some kind of technological assist.
Enter generative AI.
Exactly. And the really crucial realization here, something Dr. Beatty calls the spillover effect, is fascinating.
Spillover effect.
Okay. These custom GPT tools, they were initially designed really to fill that engagement gap for the online asynchronous learners, you know, the ones often left alone with just static readings or recordings.
Right, trying to make it less passive.
Precisely. But what they found is these tools actually benefit all the students, because even the students who show up in person, they still do, what, maybe 80% of their actual learning work independently outside of scheduled class time.
That's a good point. Homework, studying.
Yeah. So the AI effectively becomes this kind of 24/7 personalized coach or tutor available whenever the student is actually doing the work.
Okay, let's dive into the specific tech Dr. Beatty's using. We're talking custom GPTs. So AI assistants basically built for a specific course. What are some of the main tools students are actually using day to day?
The toolkit's pretty clever, actually. Take QuizMe, for example.
QuizMe.
It's a self-assessment generator. The instructor uploads the course, readings, lecture notes, whatever. And QuizMe creates unique quizzes every single time a student uses it.
Unique every time, not just pulling from a fixed bank.
Nope. Generated on the fly. And it can do traditional multiple choice, true, false, but also like scenario-based problems. And here's the really cool part. The student can talk back to it.
Talk back.
Yeah, they can adjust the difficulty. They can literally tell it, hey, I think I know more about this than you're giving me credit for. And QuizMe will then generate harder, more complex, higher level questions.
Wow, okay. That's a massive step up from just, you know, flipping through static flashcards.
Huge difference. Then there's the Syllabus Explorer.
Syllabus Explorer. To read the syllabus.
Well, yeah, but interactively.
Yeah.
Instead of just giving students a week one quiz on the syllabus that they promptly forget.
Which they always do.
This tool coaches them through it. It asks questions, makes them find information, ensures they actually engage with the course policies, the structure, the learning path right from the start. It's about interaction, not just memorization for a quiz.
Okay, that makes sense. Yes. And you mentioned addressing pain points. Feedback turnaround time, especially in big courses, is always a killer. Nope. The peer review partner.
Yes. You know how formal peer review in an LMS can sometimes take like a whole week to cycle through?
Easily, yeah.
The peer review partner gives students immediate feedback on their drafts, aligned with the actual grading rubric the instructor uploaded.
Immediate rubric feedback.
Yep. Now, it doesn't replace the human peer review that's still valuable for other reasons, but it dramatically shortens the feedback loop for revision. Students can get input, revise, improve their work right away instead of just sitting there waiting a week for comments.
It could really change the writing process.
Yeah.
But maybe the most innovative one for bridging that asynchronous gap has to be the breakout for three. Losing that spontaneous small group chat is maybe the hardest part of being purely asynchronous. How does this GPT tackle that?
Yeah, it tries to address that social and, frankly, emotional void. The breakout for three simulates a small group discussion.
Simulates how?
The GPT is prompted to act as two distinct AI personas. You give them names, maybe different viewpoints, like persona A is skeptical, persona B is really supportive or something. And then the asynchronous student joins in as the third member of this virtual breakout group. It forces them to actually articulate their ideas, respond to simulated challenges or questions from the personas, and process the material in a conversational way that they'd otherwise completely miss out on.
Hmm. Okay, I have to ask, though, if we're replacing real human interaction, even in a small group, with two AI personas, aren't we maybe solving the assessment problem, but making the isolation problem worse for those async students? Like, are we trading social learning for just, well, checkbox engagement?
That's a really critical question, and it definitely points to the limitations of where the tech is right now. This tool is primarily designed to give immediate, structured engagement with the course concepts when a live human breakout group just isn't an option for that student at that moment.
So it's a learning scaffold, not a social substitute.
Exactly. It's a compromise, absolutely. But it helps ensure that the critical thinking and articulation skills that come from that kind of structured discussion are still practiced. It's a learning tool first. And remember, the students who can attend synchronously are still getting that human interaction. This is about trying to level the playing field for the async learners, giving them something interactive.
Got it. And just to take a quick step back, making these tools, you said custom GPTs, we should probably clarify, faculty don't need to be like coding wizards or prompt engineering gurus to make these.
Oh, no, not at all. That's key. The simplicity is why it's actually getting adopted. Faculty use the standard GPT builder interface, the wizard. They basically just type in natural language instructions. That's the prompt telling the AI how to behave, what its role is.
Right.
And then they upload their knowledge files, the course readings, syllabus, rubrics, whatever. The system handles the complex stuff behind the scenes. So the student doesn't have to, you know, copy and paste 50 lines of complicated instructions just to get the QuizMe tool to work properly. It's much more user-friendly.
Okay. So let's talk formal assessment then. How do these interactions, like with the QuizMe or the breakout for three, actually factor into a student's grade? Are they getting graded on what the AI tells them?
No, definitely not. They usually contribute to that participation slice of the grade we talked about earlier, maybe that 30%.
Oh, okay.
Typically, students are just asked to submit a short summary or maybe a transcript snippet from their interaction with the tool, like a one or two paragraph reflection on what they learned using QuizMe or a summary of their breakout for three discussion.
I see.
It's simply evidence that they engage meaningfully with the material using the AI coach. Proof of the process of learning, not some final judgment of mastery handed down by the AI.
Right. Process over product. And that's it. And these tools aren't just for the students, are they? You mentioned GPTs are also helping faculty with the course design itself, especially around assessment, which we know is tricky.
Yes, absolutely. They can be really helpful for faculty, too. Thinking through those six stages of high-flex planning, BD outlines, making sure they're covering strategic choices, content planning, assessment approaches consistently across all the modes.
Right.
And a really great specific example of faculty support is helping them build better assessments.
Okay, I want to zoom in on that because designing good assessments is hard, and scoring them for potentially hundreds or thousands of students is a nightmare. Often faculty just default to simple multiple choice because it's easy to grade. How does AI help elevate that.
They can help faculty design more complex, higher-level thinking questions, even within formats that are gradable at scale, like the Duo-MC format.
Duo-MC, what's that?
It stands for discrimination option multiple choice. It's clever. It basically hides a short answer justification inside a multiple choice question.
How does that work?
The question forces the student not just to pick the right answer, but, and this is the critical part, to also explain why the distractors, the wrong options, are incorrect, usually by selecting from pre-written rationales.
Ah, so they have to analyze all the options, not just spot the right one.
Exactly. It assesses much deeper understanding and critical analysis of the material, but because it's still fundamentally a selection format, picking the right answer and the right rationales for the wrong answers, it can still be scored quickly and accurately, even for large classes.
That's pretty powerful. It keeps the grading manageable, but pushes the thinking way beyond simple recall.
Right. But we absolutely have to acknowledge some students might have real reservations about using this kind of generative AI.
Sure. Ethical concerns, environmental impact, data privacy.
All valid concerns. And Dr. Beatty is really fun on this point. Faculty must provide clear, equally valued alternative ways for students to meet the learning outcomes if they choose not to use the AI tools. That principle of learner choice has to extend even to the technology itself.
That's crucial. The choice has to be genuine all the way down. Okay, so wrapping this part up, what does this all really mean for you, the learner?
I think the main takeaway is that when generative AI is customized like this, it acts more like a sophisticated, personalized coach.
Mm-hmm. A facilitator.
Yeah. It channels the learning process, but it doesn't replace the instructor or the core human elements. And that seems key to managing high-quality, genuinely equivalent outcomes across these really diverse learning modes we see in HyFlex.
And if we look just a little bit down the road, this raises maybe a provocative question about the technological curve institutions are on.
How so?
Well, the sort of inevitable next step is linking these dynamic custom GPT tools directly into the learning management systems, the LMS.
Okay, connecting them up.
Yeah, through things called actions or standard LTI integrations.
Right, let's quickly define those for anyone listening. Mm. What's an action in this AI context and what's LTI? Sure, so an action is basically a capability you give the custom GPT, allowing it to perform tasks outside its chat window. Like it could summarize a student's learning activity from QuizMe and then automatically dump that summary into a specific Google form or secure database or maybe even trigger something in the LMS.
Okay, so it can do things.
Yeah.
And LTI.
LTI stands for Learning Tools Interoperability. It's essentially the standard secure handshake protocol that lets external education apps like one of these custom GPTs talk safely and securely to your main LMS, whether that's Canvas, Moodle, Blackboard, whatever.
Gotcha.
It lets data flow back and forth seamlessly, maybe sending that participation summary straight to the gradebook or pulling course context into the AI tool.
So that kind of integration makes the AI not just a handy add-on, but a truly embedded part of the whole educational ecosystem.
Exactly.
And your point about the timeline here feels critical. You know, we watched web development, things like the LMS itself, mature over maybe 15, 20 years.
A long time.
But generative AI seems to be hitting this level of system integration in maybe 2 or 3 years.
The pace is just staggering. It really is. And that speed means faculty, administrators, institutions, they have to be ready to adapt to these kinds of changes much, much faster than they've ever had to before. The technology itself is forcing the issue. It's demanding flexibility and a real reckoning with equivalence, not just in course design, but in institutional design too.
Wow. The flexibility of the AI demands flexibility from our institutions. That is definitely a challenging thought to end on. You really need to explore how deeply that concept of equivalent outcomes versus equivalent experiences shapes how you think about your own learning next time you sign up for any kind of class, really.
Absolutely. It changes the questions we should be asking.
Thank you for joining us for the Deep Dive. We'll catch you next time for more crucial insights.